So I think you just see greater competition for consumers' entertainment budgets. And if you're going to have your programming survive, eventually some of this is going to have to either be bundled or just merged together, where one app that doesn't have much viewership is absorbed by a larger app.
Hey gang, it's Monday, January 10th. Ross and listeners, welcome to the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by Smartly.io. I'm Marcus, and today I'm joined by one of our senior analysts covering TV and video. It's Ross Benish.
Hey Marcus.
Hey chap, thanks for hanging out. Today's fact: grooves in the road on Route 66 play America the Beautiful. The hell am I talking about? Well, Route 66, a historic highway in the US that ran southwestwardly from downtown Chicago, Illinois, 2,500 miles to end at the Santa Monica Pier in California. Well, that route existed for around 60 years from 1926 to 1985, when it was decommissioned, despite a large portion of the road still being drivable. Anyway, New Mexico's Department of Transportation decided to spice up a desolate quarter-mile stretch of Route 66 between Albuquerque and Tijeras? That's not how you say it. Anyway, grooves were added in the road that play music when you drive over them, going the speed limit of 45 miles per hour. The grooves work just like the rumble strips, which vibrate when your car drifts out of your lane. These particular strips are positioned to create different pitches when you drive over them, and if you do, you can clearly hear America the Beautiful play through the vibrations in your car's wheels. It's pretty cool.
Never heard of that before.
No, me neither. Route 66, it's pretty famous, although a lot of people think it's still alive. It's been out of commission since I've been on the planet Earth, which is surprising to hear. But I guess technically you can still drive over some of it. I've done Route 10 before, so I don't know if it's the same, but it goes all the way from Miami to pretty much to, where did I end up? To Las Vegas, I guess. But the problem with Route 10 is whilst you're driving on part of it in Texas, we're driving from San Antonio to Tucson, I think it was. No, to Phoenix, which is a long way, right? But you know, as you're driving, you get those signs that say, this place is so many miles. I don't need to know it's 954 miles. Just put later. Just put Phoenix will be later on. Don't worry about it for now. Just keep driving. It's a really long way. Anyway, today's real topic: the key video trends of 2022. Today we're talking all about the key video trends of 2022. What do you need to know in the worlds of TV and video for this year? Well, we have our expert with us, who recently put out the Insider Intelligence's US Video Trends to Watch in 2022 report, predictions for TV and digital video. We're going to talk about two of them with that gentleman right now. Ross, the first one you wanted to talk about was networks and distributors keep fighting over retransmission fees, passing the buck to frustrated consumers. What's going on here, and what do you expect to continue to go on here in 2022?
Well, so when skinny bundles, also known as vMVPDs, first came out, they were supposed to be a replacement for traditional television. When people would cut the cord, they would presumably subscribe to something like Sling TV or Hulu with live TV. But now we're seeing that many people who cut the cord do not subscribe to these products, and these products, while they're growing in their user base, that growth has slowed substantially. Much of that is due to price increases. These products used to be substantially cheaper than their cable and satellite alternatives. Now they're about the same price. And that's happened as programming costs have risen, and you see a lot of carriage disputes. In just the past few months alone, YouTube TV has had disputes with NBC Universal, Roku, and Disney. And I think you're just going to continue to see more of this as, you know, networks want to increase the amount that they charge for the carriage of their programming, and the video distributors are going to fight against that because they don't want to raise prices. And ultimately, that leaves less consumers to adopt these products.
So when we're talking about vMVPDs, skinny bundles, linear live TV streaming, it's all the same thing we're talking about here, Ross, right?
Yep, virtual cable.
Exactly. And so we have vMVPDs, skinny bundles, whatever you want to call them. Those skinny bundle households, 11% of US households will have a skinny bundle this year. Next year, 11. The year after that, 11. The year after that, 11.5. Is that largely because of these carriage disputes, Ross? And if they weren't going on, where could that number get to?
Well, yeah, well, the carriage disputes and the price rising. But the carriage disputes, it's very frustrating for people who, you know, they pay a bunch of money to get YouTube TV or Sling TV, and then suddenly ESPN has dropped and they want to watch college football that weekend or NFL, and they don't have the programming they thought they were going to have. And that's a problem that's plagued traditional television for a long time. This isn't unique to the skinny bundles, but it just kind of shows how when they made these products, they brought all the old problems with them. So people are going to cut the cord, even if you give them a digital alternative that is a little more flexible in terms of how you can cancel it and when you can turn it off and on. It's still not attractive enough when it has this like legacy baggage.
Right. And it's easier for them to pull out of that agreement if the favorite channels are disappearing from that service. So fast forward, December 2022, I ask you, what's been the big change this year with regards to carriage disputes? What do you tell me? Like, how does this end up in a year's time?
I think we just still fight over the same issues, and we see more high-profile disputes between the apps, like the, you know, the video distributors, and then the networks that they're on, as well as the devices that carry them. Because they're not just battling, you know, Disney or NBCU or A&E. They're also having to make deals with Fire TV and Roku and so on. Mm-hmm. And it leads to a lot of consumers being confused. Where is this app even available? What networks are going to be on it? That's going to change, especially with the regional sports networks.
Are there certain players that are more insulated from these disputes, or on the flip side of that, more vulnerable?
I suppose for sports fans, if you are, you know, really tethered to like what ESPN carries, Hulu at Live TV is always going to have ESPN because they have the same parent company. Mm-hmm. So, you know, they're a little protected within that group of TV networks. But aside from that, I suppose YouTube has the biggest battle to pick with, you know, someone like Roku or Fire TV, because they're battling them over ad revenue. Of course, everyone's battling over ad revenue, but these are giants in the CTV space. So, you know, I'd expect them to get in more disputes over the course of the next year.
Okay. Let's move on to a second trend here. The streaming market continues to get more crowded. Ross, how is that possible?
Well, we just never have stopped launching apps. And we're not going to see, you know, there's nothing like the scale of what we've seen in the last 2 years coming. There's nothing like Disney Plus or HBO Max coming out in the next few months, but you're going to continue to see more apps, even if they're niche, and you don't see as much reduction of apps. And so the number of apps that are streaming is rising much faster than the number of apps that people subscribe to. So people have increased the number of services they'll pay for. You know, years ago, people were paying for like three or four services on average. Now, you know, it's above six in many cases, depending on what survey you look at. Of course, that often includes password sharing where someone else is footing the bill. But people aren't going to ever subscribe to like 12 apps, no matter how many streaming services launch. So I think you just see greater competition for consumers' entertainment budgets. And if you're going to have your programming survive, eventually some of this is going to have to either be bundled or just merged together, where one app that doesn't have much viewership is absorbed by a larger app, particularly in the case where you see some of these huge media conglomerates operate like a bunch of streaming services. You know, just to give an example, Viacom, they have BET Plus, they have Showtime, they have Paramount Plus, and they have their free service, Pluto TV. That's a lot of services.
And you expect these companies to roll them up under one app or just maintain a bundle?
Well, I expect some combination. Like, definitely bundling will happen for the existing products, but I do think there will also be some pushing together. Maybe not just one app per entertainment conglomerate, but for someone who has a portfolio of five or six apps, maybe they combine them to have two or three apps. You know, an example would be like what happened with WWE Network and Peacock. You know, I think you'll see more of that, where the flagship app for that company may absorb an app that isn't really tracking that well.
Mm-hmm. Of all the different moves going on at the moment, who do you think's got the best strategy out there when it comes to consolidation and streamlining the experience, both for advertisers and consumers? Is there one that jumps out to you?
Well, Disney's been the most successful in their bundling. I don't know if it's the best for advertisers, and Disney Plus, you know, doesn't even include advertising, but you know, it's been the the most intuitive for consumers. They've gotten a lot more signups by using that strategy. As far as what's streamlined the best for advertisers, you know, I'm not really sure which is most optimized at this point.
And why do you, I mean, for Disney and their bundle, why do you think they've been so successful? Is it the price point? Is it just the fact that they've got the best content and people gravitate to that? Is it the fact that they're bundling three different services and that's easier for people to get wrap their heads around than, you know, 20 different mini apps?
Yeah, it's only three services and they're recognizable. You know, like the names of ESPN, Disney, and Hulu already had broad familiarity.
Right.
I don't think a lot of people are currently that familiar with what Peacock or Paramount Plus are right now.
Mm-hmm. What they have on
tap. We are in the industry, but like, you know, if you asked 100 consumers, I bet half of them would be confused what you're talking about.
Right. I want to quickly circle back to something you said about the average number of streaming services people are willing to pay for. TiVo, you have some research in your report, TiVo showing that the average number of SVOD services North Americans had in 2016 was about 4. By 2019, 2020, it jumped to about 7. And last year, they suggested that it was close to 9. Is this an outlier, this research?
No, I don't think it'll be an outlier. But I believe they're also, like I said, factoring in. You may subscribe to an app, but that doesn't necessarily mean that like you yourself are paying for it.
Right.
Okay. When you phrase the question a little differently, like what you're paying for, that's when you see a little closer to 6. But I don't think either approach is wrong. It's just a different way of looking at it.
Right, right. Well, that's all we've got time for the lead story. It's time now for the halftime report. Ross, we talked about two different trends today. We talked about carriage disputes and then also the streaming market getting even more crowded somehow. I'll ask you for a takeaway from each if you could.
On the streaming market getting more crowded, I would just say that streaming apps are launching at a greater rate than the increase in which people are willing to pay for them. So expect to see more bundling and even an occasional merging of apps. And then on the vMVPD side, my takeaway would be that most people who cut the cord will not subscribe to these products because they're carrying the same issues that legacy TV has, which is carriage disputes and rising prices.
Quick bonus question on the crowded market. Is there a streaming service that, you know, we're anticipating to launch this year which can make some noise, or are the established players and it's really some of the smaller guys jumping in?
I think the established players are pretty well set. There have been some that have recently launched that, you know, you expect them to gain a little more traction. Like Discovery Plus is still pretty new. It's not launching next year, but, you know, next year will be a big year for it. But I think the established players are pretty set and you're just going to see smaller people taking chunks out of that.
And we're perhaps paying more attention to the different tiers, the different options within certain services. So for example, similar to how HBO Max, they released an option last year with ads. And so you've got an existing service, HBO Max, but they're adding a different tier and that could help boost those numbers within that established service.
Yeah, and I guess the biggest one would be is if Disney Plus would ever add an ad-supported tier, that would be the biggest newsmaker. But right now, that doesn't appear to be the case.
Mm-hmm. Well, the report is called Insider Intelligence's US Video Trends to Watch in 2022, Predictions for TV and Digital Video. If you're a pro subscriber, you can check that out right this very second. So we've got time for the lead story. Time now for In Other News, but first, a quick word from our sponsor, Smartly.io. Hi to all the social media marketers out there. Listen up. Social platforms have become more important than ever for brands. You know this. So if you're looking to scale your social advertising in 2022, look no further. Smartly.io is number one in social media advertising. They help brands automate every step of the process by combining creative production and ad buying to unlock greater performance. To get the brand new 2022 social advertising trends report, go to smartly.io/emarketer. Right, folks, we are back today in other news. How big in media does Apple want to be? And what live sports can do for linear TV and streaming? Come on. Story one, just how big in media does Apple want to be, asks The Economist. The article points out that Apple Music launched in 2015. It's the second largest streamer after Spotify. Two-year-old Apple TV Plus is the fourth largest video service outside China by the number of subscribers, according to data company Omdia. Recent smaller bets include Apple's subscription gaming package, Arcade, publishing bundle News Plus, and a service that offers video aerobics classes, Fitness Plus. But winning at streaming depends mainly on splurging on content, the article notes. And Apple, the wealthiest company on the planet, only spent $2 billion on film and TV in 2021 versus Amazon's $9 billion and Netflix's $14 billion, estimates Ampere Analysis. So Ross, Apple's media ambitions are blank.
Minuscule compared to the scale that Apple has through the rest of its business.
Talk to me about that.
So whatever Apple does in media is going to be pennies compared to what they're making in tech. And they're still, especially in streaming, not among the largest players. That survey you cited that said that they're the fourth outside of China. If that's the case, that's because they heavily subsidize their viewership. I mean, you get a Apple TV Plus for free for a year if you buy a new Apple device, and you'd be counted as a subscriber whether or not you ever log in. So
right.
Not that many people are actually watching Apple TV Plus, particularly when you consider, you know, half the world's not using Apple devices, and it's very difficult to even use that service if you aren't an Apple person.
And in your opinion, does Apple get into the game more aggressively soon? Are they sat on the bench waiting to be subbed in, or are they in the nosebleed section and there's no way they're getting into the game?
I mean, they could get into it. I mean, they could spend as much money as they want. They have more cash on hand than probably about any other company in the world, but you know, you'll have to decide if this is a marriage of priority or if it's just a side hobby. And right now, outside of the music part, it kind of just, you know, seems like a hobby.
Well, to that point about whether it's a priority or a hobby, the article noted many wonder why Apple is in media at all, since none of the markets offer big prizes for the world's most valuable firm. The entire global recorded music industry has sales of $22 billion. In 2020. That's less than Apple made just from selling iPads. And in about a month, Apple generates as much revenue as Netflix makes in a year. Story two. Live sports don't just keep linear TV afloat, they boost streaming too, writes Molly Cahillane of Adweek. In the last few years, marketers have become a lot more receptive to appearing alongside live sports on digital platforms. Some brands that bought linear 2018 Super Bowl ads opted not to purchase the equivalent digital inventory, notes Dan Lovinger, an NBC Sports EVP of ad sales. But for 2022's Super Bowl 56, they have all committed to multi-platform buys. For context, last year the NFL completed a new TV rights deal worth an estimated $10 billion annually over the next decade. The deal keeps the NFL games on CBS, Fox, NBC, ESPN, and ABC for years to come, whilst extending them to a variety of streaming platforms. Ross, marketers' attitudes towards multi-platform buys, linear TV and digital video, are blank.
Convoluted.
Talk to me.
There was an article recently by Zach Rogers, former AdExchanger editor, I believe this ran in Adweek, and it was kind of like the more money, more problems situation where everyone's excited about CTV and ad tech companies are rushing in to make money on the space, but then the number of problems with ad buying continues to proliferate and they don't seem to be like they'll be solved anytime soon. You can't just throw technology at it and solve it. So I think there's a lot of confusion over how to successfully do cross-screen video buys and manage those campaigns, particularly with the issues of ad fraud and frequency capping of seeing the same ad too many times. So right now, you know, it's something people are excited about because there's a lot of viewer attention, but it's very convoluted to successfully execute.
Victoria, if we can throw on top some Mo Money, Mo Problems, Notorious B.I.G., Mace, Sean Combs. Now, who's hot, who not? That'd be great. I'm of course kidding, we can't afford that. That's all we've got time for this episode. Ross, thanks for hanging out, mate.
Good to see
you. Yes, sir. You too. Thank you to Victoria. She edits the show and DJs as well. Throw a little Mo Money and Mo Problems on there and then give Stuart the bill. He runs the team. Thanks to everyone listening. We'll see you tomorrow for the Behind the Numbers Daily, an eMarketer podcast made possible by smartly.io.